The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Doris Hyde from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you a Bard security update. Speaking Out for the Blind show from last week has been archived. A Journey Through History will meet May 1st. Fiction Old and New will meet May 4th. A memorial service for Sue Amenter will happen in Washington State on April 29th. Ron Brooks weighs in on her passing, and Judy Wilkinson has further comments on that. ACB Diabetics is looking for a treasurer. The Teddy Joy Remhild Angel Award is being funded and set up. Free Braille Declaration of Independence and U.S. Constitution available. Twitter deletes streaming June 19th. Why Persons with Disabilities Need Special Emoji, according to The Verge interview. For the today's reading of Vision News is underwritten by an anonymous gift in loving memory of Joe and Kelly. If you are subscribed to the NLS Bard support from Library of Congress, to enhance security of patron accounts and prevent misuse, NLS will be making the following change. Any patron account that has not been used in 1 year or more will be moved to an inactive/suspended status. Each day, Bard will check to see if a patron account was last used more than 1 year ago. When Bard identifies unused accounts, these accounts will be moved to the inactive/suspended status. Any Bard account that holds the status of inactive/suspended can be reactivated quickly and easily by a library administrator. To prevent this from happening to your account, simply use the service. That's it. If for any reason you find yourself locked out of your account, please contact your cooperating NLS library. We look forward to serving you for a long time to come. The Bard Support Team. Send comments, questions, or concerns to nlsdownload@loc.gov. The Speaking Out for the Blind program, Vision Forward Association and Help with Independence, has been archived. We all want to speak out for orientation and mobility, accessible technology, and daily independent living skills. But how do we do that? Jacqueline Borchardt, the program director of the Vision Forward Association in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, joined us to answer that question. We also had two clients who wanted to contribute their thoughts to this important conversation. To listen, go to http://acbradio.org/mainstream and choose one of the links under the headings Listen to ACB Radio Mainstream or Now Playing, or call 712-775-4800. And when prompted, press 1 for the ACB Radio Mainstream. Show archive page is at http://acbradio.org/speaking-out-for-the-blind. Please note that there is a link located at the top half of the page and below the heading that says Home, Speaking Out for the Blind, where you can subscribe to the podcast feed and listen to Speaking Out for the Blind shows ranging from episode 94 to the present. Facebook page is at Speaking Out for the Blind, and Twitter page is at Speak Out for the Blind. You may also access this at Speak Out Blind. My new show email address is speakout@acbradio.org. The next meeting of the Mystery Book Discussion Group will be held the 5th Sunday of April, Sunday, April 29th, 2018. Come join us. All are welcome. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Easter, and Passover. We will be discussing A Stranger in the House by Shari Lapina. You can find it on Bard by looking for DB89027. You can find it on Bookshare at https://www.bookshare.org/browse/book/197668. Signed, Ann Parsons, Group Facilitator, email akp@portaltutoring.info, Skype at PewterTutor. From Newswire, A Journey Through History to meet on Tuesday, May 1st, 2018, to discuss the Pope and Mussolini. Thanks to Bob and Vince Acosta, here is a one-hour presentation and summation by the author on Book Talk at YouTube. https://www.youtube.com/watch-query-v=8rt_-6lgo. Book Talk, The Pope and Mussolini, www.youtube.com. David Kurtzer, 69, Watson Institute Faculty Fellow, Paul DePee, University professor of social science, professor of anthropology and Italian studies, and a last annotation, The Pope and Mussolini, The Secret History of Pius XI and the Rise of Fascism in Europe, DB 78327, by Kurtzer David I. Reading time, 19 hours, 27 minutes, read by Barry Burnson. Subject, religion, government and politics, world history and affairs. Brown University professor uses Vatican archives released in 2006 to investigate the relationship between Pope Pius XI and Italian fascist leader Benito Mussolini, who both came to power in 1922, discusses the ways they used each other to achieve their goals and the Pope's ultimate regret over their bargain. Copyright 2014. Download The Pope and Mussolini, The Secret History of Pius XI and the Rise of Fascism in Europe at https://nlsbard.loc.gov/nlsbardprod/download/book/src/db78327. Accessible World Site, www.accessibleworld.org. Date, Tuesday, May 1st, 2018, time, 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, and elsewhere in the world, Wednesday, 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. About 15 minutes before start time, go to www.accessibleworld.org and click on the History Room. Enter your first and last names on the sign-in screen. If you're a first-time user of the Talking Communities online conferencing software, there is a small safe software program that you need to download and then run. A link to their software is available on every entry screen to the Accessible World Rooms. After you have downloaded the simple software, enter the room. Hold down the control key to talk and let up to listen. All of our programs are recorded and archived. You may wish to subscribe to our Accessible World Announce List. Write to aw-announcements-subscribe at groups.io. Accessible World contacts, Robert Acosta Chair, Accessible World, 818-998-0044. Email boacosta@pecbell.net. Web, www.helpinghands4theblind.org. Steve Hoffman, President, Talking Communities. Email steve@talkingcommunities.com. Signed, Don Queen. Fiction Old and New will be discussing Saints for All Occasions by J. Courtney Sullivan in the Book Nook Room of AccessibleWorld.org on Friday, May 4th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Here's the annotation. Saints for All Occasions, a novel, DB 87768. Sullivan, J. Courtney. Reading time, 15 hours, 3 minutes. Read by Susan Denecker. Subject, family. The Flynn sisters, 21-year-old Nora and 17-year-old Teresa, leave their small village in Ireland for the promise of America. 50 years later, they are estranged. Nora is a matriarch and Teresa a cloistered nun. Secrets they have hidden are revealed. Unrated, commercial audiobook, copyright 2017. Co-hosted by Sherry Wells, sherrywells1157@gmail.com. Michelle Bernstein, hamletssweetlady@gmail.com. Friday, May 4th, 2018. 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, elsewhere in the world, 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, Saturday. And the usual directions for getting into that room follow. Following are three emails regarding the passing of Sue Amater last week. When something as shocking as losing someone we care about happens, we often say the words, "If there's anything I can do, let me know." Well, here's a way we can help. When Cindy Van Winkle spoke with Sue Amater's husband, John, he mentioned that they rarely ever took pictures. He would love to have some for her service, which will take place on Sunday, April 29th, at the Silverdale Beach Hotel in Silverdale, Washington. If anyone has photos of Sue taken at any time that they would like to share, please send them to Cindy. You can email them to her at cindy.vw@gmail.com or text them to her at 360-689-0827. She is going to compile all photos and provide them to John on a flash drive. Also, if anyone would like to share their thoughts or memories of Sue, send them to Cindy at the same email address, and she will compile them for John and the family. We would absolutely love it if folks would share this email with others who knew Sue. The more people we have working on gathering photos and memories, the better. Also, we would love to have all of our ACB family join us in making Sue our next ACB angel. You can make your donation directly on the ACB website or by contacting the Minnesota office at 612-332-3242. Thank you. Signed, Denise Colley, WCB President. Ron Brooks writes, "Hello, ACB leaders, members, and friends. I am writing to add my condolences and thoughts about Sue Amater. We were not close, but I knew and respected her based on her work on the board and based on what I heard from folks within Washington Council of the Blind. More recently, Sue asked my wife Lisa to serve as a member of an advisory board for the National Braille Press, an appointment that meant a lot to Lisa because of the personal honor it conveyed. Once I joined the BOP, I became to expect and appreciate Sue's participation in almost every meeting. She was not a member, but she always had a good word, and as recently as our March meeting, she took a minute to acknowledge and thank us for the transition to digital cartridge. We had just had our April meeting last week, and I noticed that Sue was not there. I wondered, and I guess now I know, that we will not be hearing her voice and constructive suggestions on any more BOP calls. While this is true, I know we will benefit from the common sense she always brought to every discussion and the humble way she inserted herself into all sorts of issues, never wanting the limelight, but wanting just enough attention to make her point, which was always a good and simple suggestion that would solve a simple and immediate issue. Sue, I am grateful for the small part of you I came to know, and I will always appreciate your gifts of time, talent, and quiet service." Judy Wilkinson weighs in with this. "So long, Seattle Sue. I have known and admired Sue for decades. I first knew of her through the late Alan Jenkins, my longtime friend and mentor, who was director for decades of the Orientation Center for the Blind in Albany, California, in the late 1970s. He christened Sue Seattle Sue for obvious reasons to all you Triple Crown fans out there who may remember the famous Seattle Slew. Those of you who knew Sue knew she had a mouth on her which could make, as they say, the proverbial sailor blush, right in there with Alan and friends like me. The jokes that woman knew. I once remember at an ACB convention when Blind Lawyers was still ABLA, American Association of Blind Lawyers. Sue introduced its president, Steve Spiker, as president of the Blind Lawyers. A total slip of the tongue. Where was it? Which had all of us, including Sue, in stitches. While I served on the Board of Publications, Sue attended most meetings with sharp, focused input. In recent years at ACB conventions, Sue always was the librarian to the end, hosted an event in support of her beloved National Braille Press. She was in a wheelchair by then, but still spirited, game undaunted. We sat in the corner like teenagers, giggling, sharing secrets, commenting on everything, and somewhat cattily, gossiping about everyone. What an advocate. What a role model. What a friend. Rest in peace, Seattle Sue. Signed, Judy Wilkinson." From ACB Diabetics in Action, D. Clayton. "Hello, all members. ACBDA is looking for someone who would be interested in running for our treasury position. Term limits are 2 years with no term limit for the treasurer position. You would need to keep track of memberships and send names to the president and secretary. You would need to do PayPal, and at membership time, you would have to make sure everything is in the national office on time. Also, you would have to take care of the 501c3 information. If some of these seem big, but you are interested, please let us know. We can try to get someone to help you with anything you need to know, but of course, we would expect you to do the work. Please send your name and phone number to Tom Jones, nominating chair, and myself. Here is Tom's email and phone number, and mine will be at the end of the message. I'm sure we have some good people out there that can fill this position, so please let us know as soon as possible. Tom Jones, 708-341-0450. Email TOMLJONES46 at gmail.com. Let's hear from some of you soon. D. Clayton, President, ACB Diabetics in Action, 515-848-5007. Email DEECLAYTON1@gmail.com. Charles Nabarrett writes, "Hello all, we are establishing an Angel Award Fund for Teddy Joy Remhild in recognition of her great contributions to the blind, visually impaired, and senior communities. To support this effort, please send a check payable to the American Council of the Blind, ACB, indicating in the memo line that it is for Teddy Joy ACB Angel. The cost of an Angel Award is $500, so all contributions for this worthy effort are needed. Please send checks to American Council of the Blind, 6300 Shingle Creek Parkway, Suite 195, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55430-2136, or make donations by credit card at 800-866-3242. Thank you. Signed, Vicki Parker, Annie Doyle, Lillian Siafe, Don Brown, Chris Lukather, Teddy's son, and Charles Nabarrett." President, American Association of Visually Impaired Attorneys, CHASNAB46 at gmail.com. Catherine Schneider writes, "In April in Boston means we're getting ready for Patriots Day, April 16th, also the day of the Boston Marathon. But everyone can celebrate Patriots Day thanks to the generous support of the American Legion Child Welfare Foundation. We're pleased to offer this new UEB edition of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. Limit one per customer. To order more than one copy, please email us at orders@nbp.org. Subject: Constitution. To discuss cost. To order any books, send payment to National Braille Press, 88 St. Stephen Street, Boston, Mass. 02115-4302. Or call and charge it toll free 800-548-7323 or 617-266-6160 extension 520. Email orders@nbp.org. Order any of our books online at http://www.nbp.org. Peter Altschul writes, "Apps of a Feather Stick Together. The Problem. After June 19, 2018, streaming services at Twitter will be removed. This means two things for third-party apps. Push notifications will no longer arrive. Timelines won't refresh automatically. If you use an app like Talon, Tweetbot, Tweetings, or Twitterific, there's no way for its developer to fix these issues. We are incredibly eager to update our apps. However, despite many requests for clarification and guidance, Twitter has not provided a way for us to recreate the lost functionality. We've been waiting for more than a year. Who's affected? This change affects people who use third-party Twitter apps. All software platforms are affected, but it's worse on iOS and Android, where users rely on push notifications to know when something happens on Twitter. What's changing? Third-party apps open a network connection to Twitter and receive a continuous stream of updates, hence the name. For push notifications, this connection is done on the developer's server and used to generate messages that are sent to your devices. For timeline updates, the stream is open directly on your mobile device or desktop computer. This streaming connection is being replaced by an account activity API. This new infrastructure is based on webhooks that Twitter uses to contact your server when there's activity for an account. But there are problems for app developers. Why can't you fix it? The new account activity API is currently in beta testing, but third-party developers have not been given access and time is running out. With access, we might be able to implement some push notifications, but they would be limited at the standard level to 35 Twitter accounts. Our products must deliver notifications to hundreds of thousands of customers. No pricing has been given for enterprise-level service with unlimited accounts. We have no idea if this will be an affordable option for us and our users. years. Automatic refresh of your timeline just won't work. There is no web server on your mobile device or desktop computer that Twitter can contact with updates. Since updating your timeline with other methods is rate limited by Twitter, you will see delays in real-time updates during sporting events and breaking news. Why is Twitter doing this? A recent statement by Twitter shed some light on this situation. In response to a query about the new bookmarks feature, they said, "As we stated on the blog nearly a year ago, the API plans are focused on data features and access, more than on delivering client app products features. Push notifications and automatic timeline updates are both client app features. Despite a long history of third-party contributions to the Twitter ecosystem, the company continues to actively discourage client apps that mimic or reproduce the mainstream Twitter consumer client experience, including platforms where there is no native app. How can I help? As third-party developers, our hands are tied. However, you can help by letting Twitter know how you feel. Ask Twitter Dev to correct this situation. Share your feelings using hashtag BreakingMyTwitter. Talk about it on your podcast or blog. Spread the word with links to this website. Many folks don't realize that their favorite Twitter app is about to break, so awareness is the first step. Together, we may be able to get Twitter to constructively address this state of affairs before the June deadline. Thank you, Talon, Tweetbot, Tweetings, Twitterific." Finally, from TheVerge.com, why we need emoji representing people with disabilities. When Kerry Wade first heard the news that Apple was proposing emoji to represent people with disabilities, she felt happy, then immediately curious about what sorts of emoji Apple had come up with. Wade has cerebral palsy and works at the American Association of People with Disabilities. To finally have emoji made specifically for people like her felt like an important step forward. "Of course, there are going to be people who say this is inconsequential and it doesn't matter," Wade tells The Verge. "But this is one of those instances of small-scale media representation that is there now and wasn't there before. That kind of progress is always a good thing." She was also pleasantly surprised to see the service dog emoji. Apple submitted a proposal for the 13 new emoji to the Unicode Consortium a couple of weeks ago. They include a prosthetic arm and leg, hearing aids, as well as people using sign language and a wheelchair. The emoji were well received, although several people in the community pointed out that they are just a starting point. Really, when you look at diversity among disabilities, this represents part of the community, but not all, says Rachel Byrne, VP of Projects and Programs at the Cerebral Palsy Foundation. But, she adds, it's wonderful to have diversity within the emojis. In its proposal, Apple acknowledged the emoji are not meant to be a comprehensive list. Apple worked with the Cerebral Palsy Foundation, as well as the American Council of the Blind and National Association of the Deaf, to develop the emoji. Ideas were bounced back and forth, and the results were exciting, according to Tony Stevens, Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs of the American Council of the Blind. Stevens says he's excited that the emoji include a person with a white cane, the universal symbol for the blind, instead of a person wearing sunglasses, which is more of a stereotype. Having a white cane emoji can also help educate people about what the cane means, so that drivers can pay more attention when they see a pedestrian using one. It brings awareness to the diversity of people that are using smartphones these days, he says. Representation has long been an issue in media. Movies and TV shows often resort to stereotypes when dealing with characters with disabilities. Blind people are often portrayed as having heightened senses, like a better hearing, Stevens says. Disability is often linked to tragedy on the screen, says Wade. This represents part of the community, but not all. There have been improvements lately. Stevens points to an M&T Bank ad, casually including a blind woman with a guide dog, while Byrne mentions the TV show Speechless. But there's still a long way to go, and the Apple emoji are a step in the right direction. Having accessibility and inclusion of all types be a priority in tech is a huge issue, Wade says. So I'm hoping, in whatever small way, that this signals progress, and it also just means that people can have fun and have more options for how they express themselves. As we wait for the emoji to be approved, which could happen as soon as this month, The Verge spoke with Wade about what she thinks of the emoji, how they can be improved, and why they matter. What do you think of the emoji? I think it's a great development. Emojis are sort of an emergent language, especially among younger generations, so it's always great to watch these formats sort of progress to be more inclusive and not just the same icons we've all been seeing since we were 12-year-olds and first starting out on the internet. Of course, there are shortcomings. Disability is too big of an umbrella to be fully encapsulated into any sort of emoji. But I thought it was good that these shortcomings were acknowledged up front. So while there's certainly room for improvement, I'm excited to see this progress. Hopefully everything will be approved and they will be well received and frequently used so that the further inclusion that wasn't part of this first round will be possible in the future. What are the shortcomings? There are certain disabilities that are largely invisible that can be difficult to illustrate for exactly that reason, like any sort of chronic illness, psychiatric disabilities, developmental disabilities. The disability community is vast, and there are folks with disability in every other demographic. Disability doesn't look just one way. It doesn't just feel one way. It doesn't just manifest one way in somebody's body or mind. So expanding the definition of disability beyond readily apparent physical disability to include a larger swath, that's definitely some progress that we need everywhere, including emoji options and technological communication. Why is it important to have emoji representing people with disabilities? This is a language that more and more people are using to communicate with each other every day. And the idea that there are actual people represented in emojis means that every community of people should be represented. People might argue that it's not as important to have a disabled emoji versus a character in a TV show. But I think that it is important because people my age and younger, I'm 29, we're using these things to communicate with each other all the time. It's like a second language on our phones, and I think not to see yourself represented there, it says a lot. What are the biggest challenges in getting representation in the media? I think the biggest challenges with representation have to do with a sort of stigma and a misunderstanding of what disability means in people's lives. Up until now, there's been this one-sided illustration of what having a disability can mean for your life. The vast majority of media, although it is changing, have had this tragic element and sort of imply that whatever else is going on in your life, if you have a disability in some level, you must be sad about it. As somebody with a lifelong disability, I completely understand those feelings. There is some level of frustration and difficulty that comes with having a disability, but I think that having media double down on this tragic narrative really does the rest of us, real folks with disability in the world, a huge disservice. There are different ways of looking at disability that aren't based in tragedy. People who create media that's not necessarily super inclusive. It's not that they aren't well-meaning, it's just that they don't have a very holistic and wide-ranging view of what disability means. Those problems can be in part rectified with hiring more actually disabled people, both behind and in front of the camera, as creators and as performers. I would say changing the voices in the room can make the disability inclusion more of a priority from the beginning. Emojis on their own small way are an illustration of that, and there's certainly room to move forward after this, but I think it's a great effort to start. Distributor note. The below message says a meeting will be the fourth Wednesday, but has a date, which is the third Wednesday. Not sure which is accurate, so I'm reading it. The Fantasy Book Club will be held on the fourth Wednesday of this month, Wednesday, April 18th, 2018, at 9 p.m. Eastern. All are welcome. We will continue the format of having everybody read a book and discuss their book choice. Our meeting will be held over the phone. The main number is 712-832-8330. The access code is 342-2731. Signed, Julia Kulak, Group Facilitator. Email gulia.kulak@gmail.com. You can probably email her and ask which of those dates is correct. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. 832-5138.